Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the reemergence of the Heller Theater as an independent theater company. Last spring, the theater community was shocked to hear that the city of Tulsa was withdrawing its funding for the Park and Recreation Department's two theatrical programs, the Clark Theater for youths and the Heller Theater program for adults. Protests and engagement led to the survival for the Clark Theater, at least a reprieve. Unfortunately, there was no similar luck for the Heller, a black box theater known for its adventurous programs of contemporary drama and dark comedy, as well as offering opportunities for local playwrights and original productions. In fact, a month after the city's decision, the company won the Tulsa Award for Theatrical Excellence, or TATE Award, for its production of David Ives' The School for Lies. But this month, the company is revived as an independent theater company, and the new Heller Theater Company will present an abbreviated season, beginning with Sarah Ruhl's 2007 play, Dead Man's Cell Phone, opening this weekend, Friday, January 23rd through the 25th, and again, January 30th through February 1st at the Hinthorn PAC. Joining me to talk about the revival of the company is Board President Susan Apker, as well as board member and the director of the opening play, Becca Skenk. Susan and Becca, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Susan, this has been a long road for Heller Theater because about 8 or 9 months ago, all of a sudden the city, this longstanding independent theater institution in the city, the plug was pulled from the city funding. Now, I think there were probably two ways you could go. One was to say, okay, this has been a nice run, but I guess the people involved with the theater decided not to.
That's exactly what happened, and probably a lot of that reasoning came from the fact that we won the first place in the TATE Awards last year. So not only did we have an influx of funding, we had the prestige and support, really, amongst ourselves to think that, well, maybe this is something we would want to continue. Since the community seems to approve of what we do, we'd like to see it go forward.
What was the reaction when the city made that decision among the cast and crews and the actors and directors that are a part of the theater?
Well, most of the people that are involved in Heller have been involved with it very intimately for a long time. And so it was a gut blow, really. And we consciously made the decision to kind of step back and let Clark take the lead in preserving the Hinthorn space, because we felt that if it was to be preserved, they probably would be more amenable to making it work for the children.
And in fact, that is what has happened. I think
exactly.
The city, you know, what will happen right in the next fiscal year is still up for debate, but at least
right.
for this year, the city decided to continue the funding for the children's right. theater programming at the Clark.
And so we stayed behind the scenes and supported the Clark effort, and many of us went to the city council meetings and marched with the children. And through the gracious auspices of Clark, we are performing at Hinthorn for our two shows in our shortened season this year. So
now, is that the plan from now on, to continue to be at Hinthorn, or are you looking at saying, well, do we need to go to the PAC or some other facility in town?
We are looking at all options at this moment. Mm-hmm. It all depends on what happens with Clark come May with their funding and whether they're able to maintain that facility. But honestly, we are, to protect ourselves, looking at other opportunities, and we're trying to figure out what there is out there.
Now, Becca, as a director and actor at Heller, what was your reaction when all this came down?
Oh, I thought it was interesting. I was part of the group that I'm also on the board mm-hmm. for Heller Theater Company. And like Susan said, it was definitely a blow. It was one moment we had it, and then all of a sudden this just comes out in the open, and we're like, what just happened?
And literally, what is it about a month or two after this decision comes about, you win the TATE Award.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was the audience went crazy, because there were a lot of us from Heller there. And
yeah.
It was sort of like, well, here you go.
So was it a matter of after this came about, was it a matter of saying, well, how can we reorganize? I mean, you're doing two productions this year. And
exactly.
I assume this is somewhat of a trial balloon to see if you can make a go of it independently.
Exactly. We immediately determined if there was a core of people that were willing to put in the time and extreme energy that it would take to run the theater from nuts to bolts, because we would have to do everything, including things we hadn't done before, box office and ushering and, you know, just every single thing that had to do with theater production. So once we determined there was that group of people, then we immediately went about electing a new board and started working on our 501c3 status, because being part of the city, we had always been nonprofit, but we had never been a tax-deductible entity. So we knew that that was the first thing we needed to do, was get ourselves in line with everybody else looking for funding and become a tax-deductible organization.
And the first council meeting that we had such an amazing outcome of people that were there to support us. For me, it was phenomenal to see who all came out and really supported us, because we had a lot of support on Facebook, but it's different when there's actually bodies in the seats.
And, of course, you know, this is not nearly the only theater company in town. I mean,
no,
it's
right.
like I could see where a lot of the groups would say, well, I'll just get involved with this group. And,
right.
and perhaps most of your actors and most of your directors are doing work mm-hmm. for more than one theater
yeah.
company.
So yeah.
so I guess what is special about the Heller Theater, which made you want to continue? I mean, because you did have at one point, two full-time city employees basically making these companies work, mm-hmm. those people are gone. And it's a lot of part-time help now, would I think.
Yeah. We are really the only theater company in Tulsa that does nothing but contemporary comedy and drama. Most of our shows are Tulsa premieres, if not Oklahoma premieres. And that is the driving force for us. Not to say that we would never do a musical, but we don't, as a course, do musicals. We're dedicated to contemporary theater and original theater. We're starting more and more to have a thrust in the original theater arena. Heller has always had a national full-length play contest, and then we turned that over into the Shorts Festival a few years ago, mm-hmm. which we are continuing, but now we're also adding the original full-length back into it. So we're adding that as another focus component of our theater, is to work on original material.
Oh. Now, this piece you're doing for your opening production is, what, it's about 7 years old, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Sarah Rule, mm-hmm. A Dead Man's Cell Phone. Was this already in the works when the announcement came, or has this season been created in response to the fact that you are now a separate entity?
A little bit of both. We had already started looking at new scripts, and Dead Man's Cell Phone was one of the scripts we were reviewing for the next season. But then when we had to reorganize, we realized that we needed to look at some certain specifics, like setting, how much it would take to produce it in terms of finances. And so Dead Man's Cell Phone, since we had already considered it, seemed to come to the top.
Yeah. Well, Becca, now you're directing this. So
yes.
What was your attraction to the script in the first place?
It's a dark, absurdist comedy, and I fell in love with it just from the mere fact that it centers around a cell phone, that we all are stuck or glued to cell phones, basically, in this day and age. And it really hit home to me on several things, and I just thought, oh, this will be a fun challenge. I'm going to try for this.
Well, if anybody in the performing arts has this love-hate affair with cell phones, because not only do we have to use them to communicate, inevitably when we're performing, whether it's music, dance, theater, or whatever, you can count on a cell phone going off during a performance.
Yes, and you can count on several of those going off in this one too. I can guarantee it.
So set up the piece. This is a set around a 40-something woman who is having, I guess, a lunch or.
Yeah, it just starts out in a cafe, and a woman is having lunch, and a gentleman passes on, and his cell phone refuses to stop ringing.
Now, she doesn't know this.
No, she doesn't know
that he's passed on at first, but the cell phone rings.
She figures it out pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And what she does, it's this sort of, I mean, it's kind of an interesting story because it gets into this whole idea of how we're connected to our electronics.
Right.
And the personalities we can create for ourselves through our electronic devices.
Yeah.
Because what happens? Tell us.
Because she basically comes into contact with several different characters, and each one varying on different people. I mean, she meets the mother-in-law, or she meets the mom, she meets the widow, she meets some other random people that want the cell phone. And she finds out just what kind of a person the gentleman was.
Yes, Gordon was not that nice a guy.
No, he was. He would not be a person I would associate with exactly, unless I was having like organ problems.
And in fact, what he does is he is a organ broker.
Yeah, he sells organs on the black
market. And we're talking about human organs.
Yeah. Yeah, not ones you play.
This story takes this just very strange, absurdist turn as Jean as the character. Mm-hmm. She basically starts creating this life for Gordon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, she tells
an alternative life. I should mention
she gives him the type of life that she thought he should have because she has no idea who he is. So it's basically centered around a bunch of lies. And you see in the end the outcome of the lies, whether it hurts her or just what kind of a person she actually is, because you don't know at the very beginning either. Mm. So it really defines her. And I think the cast has done an amazing job at finding little nuances.
Tell us about who's in the show.
Well, we have Sarah Smith. She's doing a wonderful job as Jean. She's taken her to different levels. We've had different conversations of, well, why would she be telling this lie? Why would she answer the phone this way? And we've got Will Carpenter as Gordon, who is doing a fantastic job of playing Gordon, the organ seller.
Now, I assume there's, flashback scenes of some sort, or is Gordon just dead?
Gordon is dead, but he's still a very big part of the show.
He's dead in flashback.
He's dead in flashback, for lack of better terms. Yeah, just wasn't sure how to describe that. Then we've got Lewis Giles, who is playing Dwight, Gordon's brother. We have Jenny Lynn, who is Gordon's widow. And those two characters have really blossomed into characters of their own. They're not just minor characters. They've come into their own. We have Sherry Zizowski.
Okay.
Zizkowski.
Zizowski. Sorry.
Okay.
We've got her. She's playing Gordon's mom. She does a phenomenal job as Gordon's mom. And then we've got Susan Webb, who is the other woman / the stranger. I've got a wide array of characters, and each one has taken on a life of their own, and they all do phenomenal work together.
My guests today are Becca Skank, who is the director for Hiller Theater's production of Sarah Ruhl's Dead Man's Cell Phone, which opens Friday and runs through Sunday, February 1st, at the Hinthorn PAC, the last few years, the location for Hiller Theater, at 4825 South Quaker. I'm also joined by Susan Apker, who's president of the new Hiller Theater Company Board. Hiller Theater was a part of the city until this last spring, and the city cut the funding, and the group of actors just won't go away, like a lot of actors do. They've created their own separate theater company, and this is the first of two productions you're going to do this year. Usually a Hiller Theater season's what, about 5, 6, 7 productions?
Usually about 4 to 5 productions. And in fact, we may actually end up doing 3 productions. We just submitted a request to do our Hiller Shorts as part of Summer Stage, so we're keeping our fingers crossed that we get to do that this year. So.
Yeah. Becca mentioned the people in the cast. How many of those people are longtime regulars at the theater from its days at Hinthorn?
Sarah and Will have both performed. Particularly, Will has performed there a number of times, and Sherry is a very long-term participant in Hiller Theater, and Susan Webb has participated as well.
But of course, I assume you're always getting new actors and people
Lewis
coming through.
And Jenny,
and that's what we're hoping for, because in order to build it and grow it, we need to reinvigorate it with new energy and new people.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, so give us a sense. You're going to do 2 productions this year. Mm-hmm. Will there be a sense of evaluation at the end of those productions, or is this really, have you already really created this company for the long haul?
Our goal is to create it for the long haul. I mean, we are looking at our season for next season already, and we are financially solvent enough at the moment to anticipate another season. But like everybody else, we're starting to look at fundraising. We're looking into granting and funding, and we've started a fundraising campaign for this year just to try and see how we can do that. And so it's called Play It Forward, and we're just trying to raise funds equal to the amount of one production to see if we, as a group, can do that and keep ourselves moving forward. So, yeah, we're in it for the long haul.
Yeah. Yep. And, of course, Heller Theater has also been the location where I'm thinking of, you know, like Neil McDonough. I mean, this was the place where really you see a lot of people who end up being in films, but also a lot of playwrights that just don't you can only see in New York or on the coast for the most part. You really specialize in doing sort of original theater of things that are a little off the beaten path.
Absolutely.
Things that are definitely not Broadway plays, but say off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway sort of plays.
Yes, I would say that's definitely true, and we hope to continue doing that as well. We like the challenge, and we like doing something that you wouldn't see anyplace else.
Yeah. Well, we wish you great success with the production. What else do we need to know about this particular piece, Dead Man's Cell Phone?
You will laugh a lot. There'll be some moments that you're like, oh, that's very, very true in real life. It is for mature audiences. And we are having a strobe light, so just fair warning. There is a one scene that has a strobe light in it.
Now, I remember the Heller space was very, very intimate. Henthorne, how many people does it seat?
Henthorne seats about 25 more people. At Heller, we could hold up to, I think, 50. And
so it's still less than 100
75 people.
So are reservations really a necessary part of a Heller experience?
We would hope so, yes.
So don't just show up at the door wanting to go.
Right.
No, definitely call or email. And they can reserve tickets at info@hellertheaterco.com or call at 918-609-0482. All and right. Make reservations. Just give us your name and what night you'd like to come.
And production dates are this weekend, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And then all next week or just the weekend?
No, the following weekend as well, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All right. Mm-hmm. If people want to know more information, I assume that the same number goes for people wanting more information just about the independence of Heller Theater Company and some of the things that are going
on.
I'd
be happy to talk to them.
So after this production through February 1st, you have one other production. When is that going to be?
That will open on March 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then the 13th, 14th, and 15th of March. It's called The Language Archive by Julia Cho. It's a really wonderful script about marriage and linguistics and relationships. And it's a very sweet, funny, and insightful look at the dynamics of marriage.
And if all goes well, you'll be a part of Summer Stage this summer with your
Hopefully.
Shorts Festival.
With our Heller Shorts Festival.
Now, how does that work?
Heller Shorts is a program where we ask for submissions by local playwrights for 10 to 15 minute scripts. And then we have a committee that selects usually about the 6 top-rated scripts, and then we perform them. Very
now, is it pretty much a local playwright festival? It seems like I remember one point you were submitting, getting scripts from all over the place.
Well, that was the full-length festival was a national festival, and we kind of stopped that at the point where the year we got 600 scripts, and we just couldn't. There was a minimum number of people that were able to read 600 scripts and really evaluate them.
Sanely.
Honestly. But right now we say green country playwrights. So generally from, you know, Bristow to Claremore.
Right. And how many scripts will you get out of that in general?
We usually run 30 scripts.
Wow, so that's quite
30 submissions, yeah. Yeah, plenty enough to choose from.
Well, let's hope that comes about this summer.
Hopefully.
In the
Thank
meantime,
you.
Sarah Rule's Dead Man's Cell Phone opens Friday and runs through Sunday, February 1st at the Henthorne PAC. Susan and Becca, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Susan Apker is the president of the newly independent Heller Theater Company. Becca Skink is a board member and director for their inaugural production. Sarah Rule's Dead Man's Cell Phone, which opens Friday and runs through Sunday, February 1st, at the Hinthorn PAC at 4825 South Quaker. For more information, visit hellertheaterco.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Mark Dara.
Eastman Kodak recently sought to close its bankruptcy. A reorganized Kodak still exists, but it no longer sells camera film, a mainstay product for generations. 20 years ago, stockbrokers told their clients to buy Kodak stock. You can buy these blue chip shares, the broker said, and forget about them. Kodak has made money for years. It'll keep making money. The unspoken words, you can own Kodak forever. Today, Eastman Kodak, a shell of the company it once was, is still losing money. The financial experts had good reasons to recommend the stock. Kodak was synonymous with camera film. In the second half of the 20th century, virtually every family in America had a camera. And for amateur photographers, Kodak was the only choice. The company also sold quality film. In 1973, Paul Simon recorded an ode to Kodachrome. The song rose to the top of the charts because of its upbeat tune and because listeners knew the lyrics were true. It gives us those nice bright colors, the greens of summer, makes you think all the world's a sunny day. Oh yeah. Most of us listening back then never imagined anything surpassing those vivid colors. How much more mistaken could we have been? The management of Kodak didn't imagine anything surpassing those colors either. We resist imagining a changed world, and that failure of imagination limits our future. Some of us so resist change and are so anxious about the prospects of an unknown future, we try to make the present the past. Today, technology changes our reality more rapidly than at any time in human history. Our institutions can't adapt fast enough, and technology stands to revolutionize the way we experience our shared humanity. That's what we hear. But guess what? The pundits and commentators said the same thing during the bloom of our parents' generation and their parents' generation and for virtually every generation since the Enlightenment. Still, Kodacolor and Kodachrome are gone. Baby boomers who mourn the loss forget the images of their early childhoods were recorded in black and white. It wasn't until the psychedelic 60s that color camera film became the norm for family photography. Some people, I'm sure, resisted the change to color film and claimed black and white was the perfect medium, never to be surpassed. In this context, Paul Simon's ode to Kodachrome gains irony. After seeing how Kodachrome makes you think all the world's a sunny day, he admits his sweet imagination, the past, does the same thing, and if he could bring his past to the present, it would confirm everything looks worse in black and white. Digital photography gives us better greens of summer and brighter colors than film photography ever could. The possible combinations of color, shade, contrast, and composition from one image are virtually infinite compared to the chemical limitations of film. With digital photography, you don't have to take anything to a developer and wait days to see your pictures. You can store hundreds and hundreds of images on tiny disks, and transfer them easily from one device to another. You can take as many shots as you need to capture the perfect image and not worry about running out of film or resources. Digital photography feels limitless. Maybe it's the sense that technology removes boundaries that makes so many of us anxious about our unknown future. Maybe, too, there was wisdom in Kodak photography. When picture-taking meant Kodak, family photographers could buy rolls of film with 12, 24, or 36 exposures. After development, you had prints of the same number. While some images merited copies or enlargements, our prints were our final product. Digital photography lacks that closure. If each digital image has exponential possibilities, what do we do with them? And when would we ever find the time? Maybe that, too, is a source of our anxiety about the future. What do I do with infinite possibilities? I miss the wisdom of Kodak. When I return from a trip or a family event, I really don't need hundreds or thousands of images with infinite possibilities. 12, 24, or 36 complete and tangible photographs to hold memories are all I need. As a matter of fact, I'd be happy to share with you that many pictures from my last adventurous trip. Just don't offer to show me the 1,134 images of your family vacation to the Grand Canyon.
Mark Dare is a local writer, an attorney, and a contributor to Studio Tulsa.
It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing.
Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening. Looks worse in black and white.